Coming up on this week's show, why we believe CBS will force NBC and ESPN to raise their game, how the MLS final did in the TV ratings, what we make of CBS going into their second week of coverage, the latest news about Scottish, Portuguese, and Belgian rights, plus we have letters from you, the listeners, in our mailbag section. I'm Christopher Harris, aka The Gaffer, joined alongside my co-host, Kartik Krishnaiyer. Kartik, let's start off by talking about your favorite match of this past week.
Yeah, so I guess my favorite match was probably one of the Champions League matches. I would have to say it's tough to they were all kind of the same degree. So I mean, if I had to randomly pick, it would be Atalanta PSG before stoppage time, and say that was my favorite match. Obviously, I think that the other match, the best match, probably was Shakhtar Basel, but it was very one way. But Shakhtar so impressive in that match.
Yeah, I actually Atalanta PSG was my favorite game of the week too, and it's one of those things that, I mean, most neutrals, most soccer fans were, I think, hoping that Atalanta would win this one. But for me, though, I mean, if you're a neutral, if you're a PSG supporter, I mean, this was just an amazing comeback in this game. Of course, the riches of PSG versus the relevant kind of, well, it's not unjust, but the wages that they have in Serie A for the team from Bergamo. But ultimately, at the end of the day, you still have to put those performances in and try to win it. And it was exciting. It was a letdown, definitely. I think everyone was depressed about it. But it was an entertaining game, and I didn't expect it, Kartik. I thought that Atalanta was going to hold on to this one, at least go 1-1 and then into extra time.
But they're not a side that's accustomed to defending deep, right? Mm-hmm. And we saw this in the match against Juventus, where they had the unfortunate handball in stoppage time, right? Remember, a match that had Atalanta hung on to that, they might have really pushed Juventus until the last week for the Serie A title. As it turns out, they finished third, and Inter closed the gap and eventually past them. It's not a style of football they're accustomed to playing. So I thought that maybe it was a curse, and we can say all this in hindsight, right? Because they almost did see it out. But it was a curse to have scored as early as they did, and PSG being as off as they were. And granted, PSG had played one competitive match in the last, 5 months, right? Same for Lyon. Although Lyon looked much sharper against Juventus than PSG did against Atalanta until the very end, of course.
Yeah, PSG they've had a couple of friendlies. They played Celtic, but they did have the French League Cup game against Saint-Étienne, and they also had another game too against Lyon. But really, this is really their first big match in quite some time. What I liked about this, though, Kartik, not just this match, but both Europa League and the Champions League games thus far, is the single elimination. You mean it doesn't get any better than this. It's no away legs, no away goals, just a full on 90 minutes in a neutral venue, which is a huge plus too. And it's win or go home. And it's something that I think we should appreciate that we have it while we have it, because this is not going to be the norm. This is not going to come back in the future and be this type of format. But I wonder too, even in this Atalanta PSG game, if it wasn't this single elimination game, knockout game, if it was a two-legged affair, whether PSG would have pushed so hard late in that game. It might have ended 1-1, and PSG would have been satisfied with it, and the viewers like ourselves would have been like, oh, okay, that was a decent game, and we'll wait until the second leg to see what happens.
And similarly, would Atalanta have pulled back? Because I'm thinking about the match against Lazio, the first match after the Serie A restart, where they just kept attacking and attacking. Remember, that I think is one of the great games of this season, this interrupted season, was that match. For those of you who saw it, probably agree with me. And Atalanta got a lead on Lazio. They came from behind, and they kept attacking. But this being a single leg knockout, I felt like they had the goal, and when they didn't get a second by halftime, they became much more tentative. And while historically, Italian teams can be very organized and tough to break down. That's not Atalanta's game, right? Their game is the most free-flowing, open style of football imaginable in this day and age. And so I think it affected how they approached it. But you bring up a great point, Chris, because I think this is something that fans are excited about, the single leg, because it may give us some more random results, mm-hmm. right? By the time listeners listen to this, they'll know the result of Leipzig and Atleti. We're taping this in advance of that, but I think over two legs, we're all pretty sure Atleti would shut up shop and take care of Leipzig. But it's possible the result becomes very random in a single leg. Same thing with the fact that this year Barcelona is weaker than they've been, but in a single leg against Bayern, they can probably beat them over two legs. I don't think there's a chance this season. So similar. I think maybe we'll get some more random results. And in Europa League, we almost had a shock, right, because of the single leg with Copenhagen and Manchester United. So you make a great point about the single leg thing. It's going to be tough for some of us to go back to two leg ties next year. It's going to be kind of dour by comparison, I fear.
Yeah, I mean, we've seen that before in previous Champions League. I mean, the latter stage of the tournament usually gets very, edgy, just very, very, very nervy. Very, like, both teams do not want to lose. So it's, you mean, the first leg is usually kind of a throwaway, and the second leg, you mean, that's when it comes alive. But the one thing that hasn't been random about the coverage that we've seen thus far, Kartik, has been CBS's coverage. It's been so consistently good. It's so good, actually, Kartik, that for me, I think it puts everyone else to shame in the United States in terms of NBC Sports. I think they need a major refresh coming into the next Premier League season. ESPN, in comparison, while good, seems low budget in comparison. BeIN Sports seems a little bit amateurish now compared to what CBS is doing. And for me, Kartik, personally, I haven't been this excited about tuning in for pre-match coverage and staying with the matches afterwards for the post-match coverage. The last time I can remember this would have been probably a few years ago, at least, for NBC Sports' coverage on Saturday mornings, when kind of that Premier League Live format really kind of grew. And I'd wake up at, say, 7 or even earlier, I think about 6 or 7 in the morning to tune into the Premier League Live and then practically watch it for the entire weekend. It's that good. What do you think, Kartik? Do you agree?
Oh, I think it's better than that. I mean, it's really good. I mean, even the post-match shows on the Europa League broadcasts have been very good. I have a little bone to pick with Ruud Gullit mispronouncing names. His analysis was actually very good.
Yeah.
But I can't even pronounce Sevilla properly, which...
It could be a language thing, though, too, in terms of Dutch. And I'm not sure what the Sevilla... I mean, it would have been for me personally, too, like growing up in the UK, it was always Seville, Seville, until I came to the United States. And then Sevilla's become such an international brand. It's only in the last maybe 10 years that, to me, you know, I would say Sevilla very naturally versus Seville in the past. So that might have been something that kind of threw him a little bit. I'm not sure. But yeah, it was a little bit strange on that one.
Yeah, but Honigstein, phenomenal. What an ad to get Rafa Honigstein. And here's the thing now that I'm concerned about, and I tweeted about this, looking back at ESPN FC, who had Honigstein regularly on their show for 6 years, and the Guardian podcast. They put him in this German Bundesliga bubble, right? They put him in this silo where he was only talking about that, or he'd talk about Jurgen Klopp or Tuchel. Obviously, the Tuchel thing obviously came up with PSG also now, but talking about something connected to Germany. What we found with the Shakhtar match and then with the Sevilla match is that he's very comfortable talking about any football from Europe, and he's more than just a reporter. He's got a really real depth to his analysis. So quite a coup for CBS there.
I think
their hosts have all been excellent. Oh, yeah, sorry.
Just to chime in on that one, Kartik. I think in some ways, though, that Rafa Honigstein got a little bit lost in the shadows with Gab Marcotti at ESPN FC. So if there was kind of a more of a continental European discussion point or something that was pan-European, usually Gab would be the one that would talk about it and be brought in, where Rafa was, okay, all right, this Bundesliga, let's go to Rafa. But yeah, your point's very valid, Kartik.
Right, and And Mark Hadi is brilliant, so I don't want to take anything away from him. They're just very different in the way they approach their analysis. And that I think that's right. That is the reason, because in that era, Mark Hadi was on ESPN FC every day, more or less.
Did you see
– there was no opening.
Speaking of at Atalanta, did you see the pre-match coverage where he had Roberto Martinez and Jamie Carragher at the tactical board? Like him breaking down that. That was mind-blowing in terms of just the way that they were able to – kind of analyze that, but also from Carragher's kind of being a central defender, giving a different viewpoint in terms of some of the holes in Atalanta's defense, which we saw happen in the first half with Neymar's chances kind of breaking through pretty easily. But that I thought was really, really well done, that tactical analysis.
Yeah, and I think what Martinez was talking about in terms of the way Atalanta plays, he nailed, and they got away from it in the second half, which is the frustration for me as a neutral. And I'll admit, I mean, I'm a neutral, but I've fallen in love with this particular team this season. And they were very good last season too, but I didn't watch as much Serie A last season, admittedly. So I was really gutted at full time. And I wasn't alone. I mean, I got on social media, and they had captured the imagination of the public. And I think those sorts of tactical discussions help, because it helped people understand who may be tuning in for the first time, why Atalanta captured so much of the fans' attention. Martinez got into that, just into the way they play. But yeah, the tactical board is something that we saw NBC use sparingly, and only when they had Microsoft Surface tablets or some sort of sponsor build-in. And I think, you know, and I don't know if we want to have a larger discussion today or another time, but I think NBC is squarely they are now behind the eight ball, so to speak, because I think what we've seen from CBS is a major American network that is able to elevate their studio coverage to levels that we had thought NBC was taking us. And I don't want to take anything away from 2013 and 2014 and what you said when I was the same. I would wake up at 6:30 in the morning and consume all that stuff. But this is a far cry from that. That I think was an evolution in the middle of the decade that was very useful, but then they never kicked on, right?
Yeah.
It's almost like the team in a top European league that contends for titles and qualifies for Champions League 2 or 3 years on the bounce and then falls to mid-table obscurity. That's the way I view NBC's Premier League coverage right now.
With CBS, I mean, the way that they're taking this Champions League and Europa League, I mean, the Europa League hasn't gotten this much love probably ever on US television, well, not television, but US streaming. But the way that they've focused in on this is it's World Cup level. I mean, the last time I can think of whether they had this many guests and high level, really top level coverage would have been back to what, the 2014 World Cup with ESPN, and even back to 2010 too. Those would have been kind of the high points.
Although, honestly, I'm not sure even that they focused on every match the way at this level. I mean, the Europa League coverage is unprecedented. That I think we can all agree on.
Yeah.
In Champions League, I think even – and again, it goes back to this kind of format of single games and it all being in a condensed time frame maybe. But I don't even know in the World Cup outside of U.S. games and other nations of interest in the U.S. market of ESPN did this knock up a job. They were great. Don't get me wrong. But in terms of tactics, looking at individual matchups, the things like the Carragher-Martinez segment, which, by the way, we saw that the very first day they had Champions League coverage before Man City-Real Madrid. We saw Peter Schmeichel involved in that discussion also. It's stuff we've never seen on American television at this level.
Yeah, I think the ESPN would have been close, though, if I remember right, which is going back many years ago now. But if I remember right, they had the kind of the sit down in the kind of the casual around the coffee table discussion, high level analysis. You had some debate, and the tactical stuff, I'm sure it was there. I don't remember it as much. This having been like what daily now that we're seeing these types of things, it's more in the front of my head, but. For those people who haven't watched any of the pregame or the post-match has been very good too. Definitely, I think Kartik and I agree that definitely it's a must see. But Kartik, out of everyone there, I mean, there's a lot to choose from. It seems like almost every day there's more announcements about more talent being added. Who would you say are your top two favorite people on board as far as the coverage?
So last thing I wanted to add was, I think 2016 Euros, now that I'm thinking back, ESPN did a really good job, especially between games, bringing Taylor Twellman, who was calling or was a co-commentator for a lot of games, in him and Stuart Robson to talk tactics, right?
Right.
So I should
along
say
the River Seine.
And excuse me?
No, I just along the River Seine.
Once they got that studio built, right? At first, because of the labor problems, they were in another studio. But so I think that was good. So my top two would be one, Roberto Martinez. That kind of goes without saying. And boy, for second, that's really a toss up. Maybe I give Honigstein the slight edge over Carragher, but I mean, I think they've all been really good. I mean, I definitely put Schmeichel in that discussion, even though I think there's some awkwardness on camera now, and that comes from rustiness. He used to be on TV a lot more in the UK than he has been lately. Mika Richards had some moments, but I'll opt for Honigstein second.
Yeah, so Peter Schmeichel, I think in many ways, the last couple of days we've seen him where he's been on site at the stadium. He's definitely a lot more comfortable. He's a lot more kind of friendly in the studio. He's a little bit stiff. He was wasn't sure which camera to look at. But I would say, Kartik, which I know that you're biased in the opposite way, but I would say my number one is Mika Richards. He's been such a breath of fresh air, such a great feel-good character, really positive energy, really fun to listen to, brings a smile to my face. And my number two is Alex Scott, for similar reasons too. She's been just a ball of energy, just so fun to listen to and to watch, and I've especially liked the pieces that she's done, the segment pieces where she's in Portugal, she's in Lisbon, she's giving us a little bit of kind of the history and the culture and the sights and scenes and the match day atmosphere, which is very little of it, but still that's interesting. And for me too, as somebody who, I mean, world traveler, loves soccer, I mean, living in the United States for like the last 35 years and living in the environment I'm living in now in Florida, kind of COVID capital, and then just seeing the people in the streets and even with Guillaume Balaguer kind of in the background and kind of walking around, seeing how life is changing there so differently than here. I mean, it just pulls me right into this broadcast. I would say out of all the talent, there's no weaknesses. There's no one there that can say that, oh my gosh, that person needs some work. Well, actually, CBS Sports HQ is a different story. That we could probably go on about some of the weaknesses there. But as far as the CBS All Access, it is absolutely spectacular. Having said that, Kartik, giving CBS all credit, there's still room for improvement. I still think that they can actually make it even better. It's going to be difficult, but I'm confident. And so far, rather than going to focusing on the negatives, I think it's just been absolutely spectacular.
This is a case where I overcompensate, because I know if people who know me or know I'm inclined to just say Mika Richards, right, out of my personal sentiment for him. So I do have a bias, so I kind of have to put that aside. But I appreciate your sentiments with him as well. I have to say that.
What about the commentators? What's your thoughts about the commentators so far?
Well, Peter Drury, I think, is the best commentator in the English language right now. So, and yesterday, Atalanta, PSG, he and Beglin were even more comfortable knowing they were covering this match and calling this match for an American audience. I think the first match we saw some, the Barcelona-Napoli match, we saw some of that with Conrad De La Fuente being mentioned and an elongated conversation about De Laurentiis, the owner of Napoli, that we would not have had normally when they call matches for the World Feed or for ITV in the past. But yesterday it was like he knew he was calling the match for the American audience. And unlike Clive Tilsley, who I think his – and I love Clive Tilsley also, but I think Clive Tilsley maybe has some thoughts that the American audience isn't familiar with these clubs and with Champions League. So he's called it in a little bit more of a – educational way.
Right.
Yeah.
I was going to say he's dumbed it down a little bit.
Dumbed it down, that's right.
Just a slight little bit. Not too much, but there is a little bit of that.
Drury has not done that at all. In fact, Drury and Beglin, and let's remember they're a team and they're very much a team calling Premier League matches also, have understood that because they're calling the match for a network and a specific audience, it allows them to elaborate a little more. It allows them to add a little more layer to their analysis. Not dumb it down, but quite frankly, do the opposite. So, and Tilsley has been very good too. I thought Rob Green was a pleasant surprise on the Man City Real Madrid match. But boy, I could listen to Peter Drury call any match at this point. And we've talked about this before on the podcast and how brilliant his call was in Roma Barcelona. That sort of elevated him to a new level. But he's been fantastic, and I think he's for me number one in the English language. I would put John Champion, who I know we'll talk about MLS in a minute, who called the MLS final this week. I put him a close second. I think he's still at a high level. But yeah, I've loved the commentary, and again, I don't want to beat up on NBC this whole podcast, but when you've got Drury and Tilsley calling your matches for an American audience, I think that has to put NBC under some pressure to have a permanent second team. Obviously, we know Arlo White is the lead commentator paired with either Lasso or Dixon, but a permanent high-level second commentator instead of kind of the rotating thing, which I believe has a lot to do with cost cutting that we've seen the last few years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we'll get to NBC in a little bit though too, but it's interesting the two, Kartik, because you probably saw this, I'm not sure if you did or not, but you probably saw the poll we had on Twitter maybe a few days ago under World Soccer Talk, and the question was who's your favorite commentator? And we had four choices. Actually, favorite new in quotation marks commentator that's broadcasting, that's an English commentator that's broadcasting for a US company. And in there, we had Clive Tilsley, we had Peter Drury, we had Arlo White, and John Champion. And all four of those are, you mean, top class commentators. All four of them have different styles. All four of them have, you mean, kind of a different type of fan base in many ways. So Clive Tilsley is the voice of the Champions League. But he's the voice of the Champions League to listeners or viewers in the UK. You mentioned Clive Tilsley to people in the United States, and they'll remember him from being the voice of one of the video games, and they'll remember him maybe doing some spots for NBC Sports last year. But by far, he is not the most well-known commentator, even though he is the number one commentator for CBS All Access. I mean, he's doing most of the Champions League games. He's doing the Champions League final. It's Peter Drury that's getting the Europa League final and still doing a lot of the Champions League too, but would be a close second in terms of the ranking there. The poll, though, had number one, after more than 1,000 votes, number one was Arlo White, number two was Peter Drury, number three was, I think it was John Champion, and then number four was Clive Tilsley. But I based that on the actual results. I based that more on the familiarity of those people. I mean, I don't think that many people, even hardcore soccer fans, I mean, you and I know them, and I'm sure a lot of our listeners do, but there's some of us that probably aren't as familiar with Clive Tilsley. I just thought that was interesting with Arlo being number one. But Arlo, I think everybody knows just from how many years has it been, like 7 years now of Premier League coverage. Having said that, Kartik, I do agree with you. So NBC Sports, for this next season coming up, which starts, September 12th, they'll be here before you know it. And especially with their launch on Peacock. I mean, yes, they had some games on Peacock at the end of this past season, but this is going to be a big launch for them in September, pushing hard on to get a lot of the games on Peacock, but also that being kind of their big, huge streaming platform. I think they have to change things. I think it's time for a refresh, kind of just, and all of us love and know, you mean, Rebecca Lowe, the two Robbies, Carl Martino, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And I think we've gotten to know them so well, but they've become very predictable. They've been at times boring. They've been at times interesting, but we know what we're getting when we're listening and watching those. And I just wonder, it's a question, I mean, it's really a question for Pierre Moussa, who's the head of production at NBC Sports for the Premier League. But does he have the opportunity, does he have the budget available to maybe do something different and maybe start off the new season based in the UK and have his talent based there for a while until things calm down over here? But then there's a whole bunch of, you know, when will they be able to come back to the States? I mean, Rebecca Lowe has a young child. The two Robbies, I mean, they have family in the United States, so maybe they stay in the States and continue broadcasting from Stamford, Connecticut. But then do they tap more into Sky Sports and try to get leverage some of their talent there or things that they're doing? But that's the big one, Kartik, is how does NBC Sports respond to what CBS has done?
Yeah, or even add new features with existing talent. Because I look at that tactics board, and we talked about Carragher and Martinez and how well they did with it. I think that's right up Robbie Musto's alley. I think he would excel with that sort of conversation. I mean, I don't know if you pair him with Martino or Earl on that. I mean, that's a decision for Pierre Moussa and NBC Sports. But I think just integrating a feature like that would liven it up a little bit. And then I know some people disagree on this, but the loss of Neil Ashton, and obviously it happened in the middle of a season, and we know why he went into private business within weeks. Ed Woodward and Manchester United had hired him as kind of their PR flack. But the loss of Neil Ashton has made these pregame shows, to me, absolutely worthless, because at least you were getting top-level insider information from a legitimate reporter, one of the top reporters in the business, not one of these Sky Sports people who I think are just talking to a single player agent or repeating what's already out there. So I also think that they need to find some sort of replacement for Neil Ashton. It was bad timing. I think it was bad timing for everybody. He was on a Sky show, and it was terrible timing for that show too, that he hosted on Sunday mornings when he left. But I think that that's also very imperative, that they fill that hole in their programming gap. Here's what's happened with NBC through the years, Chris. And every time someone has left, Steve Bauer, Gary Lineker, Neil Ashton, just haven't replaced those people, right? They haven't replaced the segments. They haven't replaced the features. They haven't replaced the kind of documentaries that Goalhanger Films and Lineker were producing for them. So they just kind of gradually – it's not like they've even stayed at the same level. People have come back at me with my criticisms of NBC and said, well, you say it's stale. That's true. But if it's really good, why change it? Well, I don't think it's even at the same level as it was. When I say it's stale, there are aspects of it that are stale. There are other aspects that have regressed.
Yeah, but there is one thing, though, too, Kartik, in those 7 years that NBC Sports has been covering the Premier League is really, really, they had no competition. They had nobody that was really pushing them hard, that was making them look inferior in some ways. I mean, yes, definitely NBC Sports still does good coverage and still has some good segments now and again, but a lot of it the last couple of years has seemed to be hypey. For you and I know, you mean, we've talked about this before, is we're almost like a little bit burned out on that same talent. And I love Kyle Martino, but I don't know, maybe having somebody different there in that role or rotating those out and putting some new fresh faces in there
and
now and again.
Having like Roger Bennett as your go-to interviewer, your go-to kind of special features person, he has a clear role in his Men in Blazers world, and he excels at that. But I think, again, you might want to bring someone else in to do that stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of opportunities there to grow and to change and improve things, whether they will or not, because I know budget constraints, especially with a lot of these TV broadcasters, are a big concern. But at the same time, like I said before, too, Peacock is such a huge priority for them. It's priority number one. So you will see Peacock promos, ads, everything on that TV coverage, and trying to push people to that Peacock premium really, really hard once the season starts up. But what about ESPN, Kartik? Because, I mean, we've seen kind of hints of their coverage as far as some of the DFB Pokal tournament, the final, the semifinals on ESPN. And we saw kind of the Adrian Healy and Taylor Twellman kind of crew together. We saw Serie A, some of the games with Matteo and Mark Donaldson, and that, again, a duo. And then we've seen, of course, with the MLS's back, with John Champion and Taylor Twellman. That seems to be their format now, is having a two crew doing both the presenting and the analysis and the commentary. And in comparison, that seems to me, at least, while all of those are good individuals in terms of the talent and analysis, it seems to be a little bit low budget compared to what CBS All Access is doing, where they're going all out.
Yeah, I don't know if it was an experiment, a post-COVID experiment that they didn't have. I mean, I was really kind of surprised they didn't have an actual studio around the MLS's back tournament. I understand why they did what they did with Serie A, which was generally they haven't had studios before with Serie A, but what ended up happening, or they've used ESPN FC's studio team and taped a segment, although once in a while it's been live, but they had multiple games. They were doing games every day in Serie A, which was a welcome surprise, right? But I think Max Brado's not being there really hurts them in this respect. I mean, I think he's the guy you would put in the studio, obvious person you would put in the studio for any kind of Americanized soccer coverage, right? Yeah. Who gets the European angle too. I think Serie A also, he'd be the guy. And then when you talk about the ESPN FC show, I think they've tweaked it a bit. They've experimented a bit with it. Although, let's look at the FA Cup final and the job they did on that. That was a higher level presentation than anything we get from NBC. So they had a full hour pregame show with Kay Murray. Stu Robson was on there. Alexis Nunez, and then you also had Don Hutchison on there, and so that's a really good team right there. And then you had a halftime show and a post match show with Craig Burley and Dan Thomas, which is as good as it gets. So they elevated it and gave us kind of a tease with that one match. So are they going to go more in that direction with Bundesliga? Because it was a remarkable presentation and production for the FA Cup final. Or are they going to go to the cost-cutting measure? Now, if you're going to cut costs, there's no one better to do it with than John Champion and Taylor Twellman. So because they have that particular commentary team, maybe they can get away with it to a certain extent, because those are two of the best at what they do in the English language anywhere. I would submit, I put Champion a close second behind Peter Drury worldwide, English language commentators right now. I think he's past Martin Tyler. And I put Twellman right at the very top. You know, maybe Stuart Robson or Gary Neville are the only ones I would say that are maybe better than him or as good as him. So I think that allows ESPN the ability to kind of cut costs and not make it show. But CBS has raised the bar, so let's see how they respond.
All right, Kartik. So Taylor Twellman is good, but I don't think he's that good. When you give him a specific game or a specific tournament and say, okay, all right, Taylor, you're going to be doing Euro 2020 or Euro 2016. I want you to focus in on these teams. And just focus in on a high level tactical analysis and. I mean, that same thing with MLS's back too, but you can't spread him too thin where, he's going to be doing maybe doing Bundesliga, and especially with ESPN having a lot of the MLS coverage, and hoping that he's going to be able, he will be doing a lot of the MLS coverage too, and he's already had a busy summer with the 52 games or whatever it was, 51 games. I think he's good, but I just don't think he's that good. I don't think he's one of the best out there. And that's the elephant in the room, Kartik, is that we look at what CBS has been doing, and a lot of this is based on the world that we live in, where it's like, okay, is it easier to go ahead and have a crew in London and have them situated there, where it's, from a health perspective, safer, and it's easier to pull in talent there than to try to create something in Bristol, Connecticut? And with Bristol, Connecticut, yes, there are some really good analysts and some really good commentators. John Champion's one of the best. You've got some, Seb Salazar and others too that are really good with their analysis. But you're limited to a certain degree. You're not bringing in any new fresh blood, fresh ideas. Taylor, while I appreciate his analysis, he does get annoying after a while. And I think there's a lot of listeners that probably feel the same way too, where it's like, it's just too much Taylor.
I have a friend who told me during the DFB final, the Leverkusen Bayern final, that Taylor was just showing off, because he was just showing off that he knows more about the Bundesliga than these two teams than anyone.
Yeah, I think
I kind of appreciated that, but I kind of get what you're saying.
You either like him or you don't like him. I think in terms of a lot of the other. Roberto Martinez, I don't think I've ever met a person or heard from a person that's disliked him. He's a likable guy, but he's very knowledgeable, good communicator. I mean, somebody is, that played at a high level, but also is managing, I mean, a team at the very highest level too. So, I mean, does ESPN, I mean, okay, don't laugh.
I think ESPN has to think about bringing in Derek Ray and Ian Joy for Bundesliga. I'll say that right now. I hope they're not set with their commentary teams and with their presentation teams, particularly for that specific league. Those are the two best guys you can bring in.
Well, the elephant in the room, Kartik, is that with CBS, what they've done and what ESPN is doing and what NBC has been doing is that American commentators, American talent, American analysts, I mean, how do they compare to others from around the world? And you look at the United States, well, you look at what CBS is doing, and it is all 100% European. I mean, it's a European tournament. I mean, the studio is based in London, so they're pulling people in from there. You look at what ESPN is doing, which is definitely more cosmopolitan. You've got a different variety of different focuses, but mostly, again, either American talent or, you mean, either Scottish-American or, I mean, just but people that have lived in the States for a very long time. NBC is very much a European-based, other than Kyle and kind of some infrequent Liam McHugh or, Ahmed, etc. That's the elephant in the room, is the analysis and level of talent in America good enough to pull off what CBS is doing with what they're doing in Europe?
Yeah, and they still keep a little bit of an American flavor to it. I mean, I remember Alex Scott really well as a player in our women's league for several years when she played for Boston. So I know that there's a familiarity, and obviously Kate Abdo also has spent a lot of time now in the U.S. There's a familiarity with the U.S. audience among some of their presenters. That's the big question, right? And when I mention Ian Joy and Derek Ray, the people there will be people who push back on me saying, oh, well, that's more Scottish Americans because of their accents. But I think for the Bundesliga in particular, those two guys are musts. Now, in a bigger picture sense, what happens to American talent? We know Fox, whether they've would admit it or not, have been very aggressive in promoting American voices and American talent on air, to the detriment maybe of those who did not have those who had foreign accents. With Fox fading as a force in club football outside of MLS, and we assume they're going to make an effort to keep MLS rights, especially since they have World Cup rights in 2026, but we also have to assume they're not going to pick up any other club football, right? Other than the Club Tijuana stuff, you know, they're not going to have an entire league to present. We might see two exceptionally different approaches between Fox with a very kind of Americanized feel. Turner was doing that as well. And then this European feel of CBS and NBC. And we could say ESPN is a hybrid, but the Americans that are on ESPN tend to be kind of more European in a lot of their outlook and their analysis. I would say that for sure about Taylor Twellman. And I think Hercules Gomez, when he's on, maybe not as European, but he's very kind of critical in a way that a lot of American commentators are. And then Casey Keller, when he's on, is very European in the way he views the sport. So I think you've got two different models, and they're growing maybe further apart with the introduction of CBS to this sport.
Yeah, for me personally, at the end of the day, it's not, it shouldn't be based on ethnicity, or should not be based on where they come from, or you mean who they played for, or whatever. It should be based on their talent, based on their knowledge, based on how good they are, and that's where the hiring decisions should be made, focused on that. Now, as far as the US goes, and this could be a whole other episode in the future, but it's hard to come up with a dream team of US analysts and commentators that are top level. I mean, Tim Howard is okay. He's not the greatest. I mean, Moadu is fast, up and coming, but still has a way to go. Stu Holden, I think, it wears his heart on his sleeve a little bit too much when it comes to the U.S. men's national team, and isn't able to be as critical as he could be and should be at times when they need that kind of critical analysis. And Lalas is really kind of more of a, sadly, kind of a clown show, just a fox. It's hard. It's really hard to come up with a dream team. I mean, Janusz Michalak is somebody that's kind of been almost ostracized from US soccer coverage, but is very good. I mean, to me, he's very American. He's played for the United States. He's lived in this country for a long time. But that's an example of somebody that really isn't really featured much.
And I think he's also been punished for knowing too much about continental leagues. If I'm being frank, I don't want to get people get very angry when I hit on the Premier League. But I think Janusz being more continental in his outlook and understanding Serie A and understanding the leagues in Europe have hurt him.
Yeah.
But I think he's another guy ESPN should look at for Bundesliga coverage, now that you mention him.
Yeah, but when you look at everything that's happened, this has just been 1 week of CBS coverage. CBS has hit the ground running. Not only have they hit the ground running, but they've turned everything upside down. Now, all of a sudden, well, not all of a sudden, but we're questioning NBC Sports. We're questioning ESPN. We're questioning beIN Sports. I mean, to me, beIN Sports have let so many people go that who they have left are decent, but they're not anywhere close to the level that they should be having La Liga rights, having Liga and rights. So they've scaled back big time in terms of how much they're spending. But I mean, I guess it's a good thing, Kartik, for us, the TV viewers or the streaming viewers, is we're getting high level analysis. It's been top level. And hopefully, maybe it'll force everyone else to change and up their game. All right, Kartik, let's move on to TV streaming news. Not a lot to get to this week, but some interesting news, needless to say.
Yeah. So this week, ESPN Plus increased their price increase by $1 from $4.99 to $5.99. The streaming service also announced that it's now up to 8.5 million subscribers, although I should mention Disney Plus is now up to 60 or 65 million. I forgot the number. So that was it's just a fraction of that, and a lot of those people are coming through the bundle with Disney Plus. The annual price for ESPN Plus remains the same at $49.99. Also, those of you that have been subscribing for the monthly package for a while, you're grandfathered in for, I believe it's another 6 or 9 months. So you won't see the jump in cost for 6 or 9 months, at least, if you're grandfathered in. But if you're a new subscriber, you're going to pay $5.99 a month.
Yeah. Or you can get the annual price, which is $49.99 a year, which is definitely a great savings there. Now, as far as some quick hits with some news, the Ted Lasso comedy series begins on Friday on Apple TV Plus, and Apple TV Plus has a 7-day free trial. What I don't know yet is whether or not they'll have all of the episodes available at once, or whether they'll spread them out over a weekly basis. But
So what I understand they're doing is that they're doing the first 3 episodes at once, and then they're going to spread the rest of the episodes out once a week.
Okay.
So that's how they're doing it. And by the way, they did a knock-up job of advertising on Champions League.
Yep.
That my stream froze at halftime yesterday of Atalanta PSG. We're recording this on Thursday, by the way, and I missed a good chunk of the halftime show. So because my screen froze during the Apple ad, and I was like, now I know, like, Ted Lasso, have to watch it, because I was staring at it for 3 minutes before I realized the thing had been frozen.
Yeah, which is smart advertising from Apple in terms of just having it on every day with the CBS All Access, having that ad running. So so that starts on Friday on Apple TV Plus. The Nicholas Anelka documentary we've mentioned before, I haven't had a chance to get to it yet. It's subtitled, so usually the subtitle stuff, I usually kind of need to kind of focus 100% of my focus and energy on that. So I need to find some time, maybe one of these off days in the next few weeks. And then as far as rights from around the world, World Soccer Talk wrote a story last week that the Portuguese Primeira Liga is coming back to Gol TV this season. They haven't finished the actual final paperwork on this one, but it looks like that the Portuguese League and Gol TV have agreed a deal. So that's good news for fans of Portuguese soccer, FC Porto, Benfica, Sporting Lisbon, etc. And then we have the Russian Premier League. The Russian Premier League was available before on YouTube TV via a subscription, And now that has moved to Fubo TV. Fubo TV has a Fubo TV Sports Network 2. On the first Fubo Sports Network 1, they have the Cooligans and they have Julia Stewart Binks and some other shows. But the Russian Premier League looks like it's heading to Fubo TV. And then last but not least, the Scottish League. Still no updates on the Scottish League. I know that there's some broadcasters interested in getting the rights to the league. The league kicked off on August 1st. The Belgian League kicked off last weekend, opening weekend, and no broadcaster yet has picked up those rights. And supposedly there's some broadcasters interested in that league too. In the past, 11 Sports probably would have picked those rights up. But 11 Sports has done a deal with the Belgian League where they're producing the games. So so it doesn't make any sense for them to go ahead and produce the games and then go ahead and actually broadcast them because they're not making any money off it. So if they produce those games as they're doing right now and sell those rights onto someone else in the US, then they can at least recoup some of that money back from that. Contact TV ratings, not a lot to get to, but there are some important ones here. What stands out for you for this past week?
Oh, it was the million viewers or so. I thought a million one, maybe. I think the number got pared down to 967 as I'm looking at it now for the Barcelona-Napoli match on 2DNA and Univision. And that shows me the power of what happens if you put Barcelona or Real Madrid, but Barcelona in this case, on a Saturday afternoon on an accessible channel versus putting it on BN. No offense to BN.
Yep.
And this is something La Liga. I know we've probably talked about this since we started this format of the show, so 3+ years now. But gosh, I mean, if I'm La Liga and I'm Relevant Sports repping them and I see that number, I'm on the phone trying to get match a sub-license, something, some sort of arrangement for this coming season, especially with Bundesliga headed to ESPN. With Serie A now, their numbers consistently breaking 100K on ESPN. You know, some were 150, 170, some of those Atalanta matches we talked about a couple weeks ago, and now Champions League on CBS. So the ball is in La Liga's court. They extended their worldwide deal with BN. I think they need to be creative like the Bundesliga was in the U.S. The Bundesliga had a worldwide deal with Fox, but they weren't happy with what Fox in the U.S. did, and they found another partner here. La Liga, I don't know how Tebas and Relevant are viewing this, but boy, I mean, that number jumped out at me when it was reported earlier in the week when we saw it. And I think that the analysis is pretty straightforward, what I just gave with that number.
Yeah, I completely agree with you, Kartik, but it's never going to happen. It's never going to happen because anytime, say if BN Sports said, okay, we're going to do a sub-license deal with, say it's Univision, or say it's Fox Deportes, or whoever it may be, the moment that you go ahead and sub-license, say, a Real Madrid game or a Barcelona game, is that kills BN Sports. Then there's no, what's the purpose of even having subscribing to it being sports when you can watch Barcelona games or Real Madrid games on Univision or Fox Deportes or whoever. Now, from a league perspective and from a Relevant Sports perspective, it makes complete sense to go ahead and do that. I think that if you take any of those La Liga games away from being sports, it just really undermines the value of being sports or having being sports as a channel. Having said that, I know that behind the scenes, there have been discussions, and La Liga and Relevant Sports have spoken to BN Sports in the past to say, hey, can we work out some type of deal here? Can we get some type of sub-licensing? What can we do to make this happen? And BN Sports has stood firm and said, okay, no, the contract we've signed shows that we have exclusive rights to all La Liga games, and that's it. They're not budging. So it is one of those things, unfortunately, at the end of the day, is that we the viewers, get stuck where, okay, if you want to watch La Liga, the only way you can do it is through BN Sports, and that's it. Which helps BN Sports out, does not help out La Liga or Barcelona or Real Madrid or any of those clubs as far as growing that fan base. And Kartik, just quickly, as far as MLS is back, congratulations to ESPN and Major League Soccer on a really good tournament over the past month. The viewing numbers, I mean, no surprise, not the greatest. I mean, the final was 365,000 viewers primetime on ESPN on Tuesday night between Portland and Orlando. The semifinals, I think Orlando, Minnesota was 227,000 on ESPN2. And then Portland against Philadelphia on FS1 last week was 206,000. So what it tells me is that, and we've gone on a lot about this in the last few episodes, is, and looking at the Barcelona number, there is an appetite for soccer in this country. I don't think there's an appetite for Major League Soccer in large numbers. Listener mailbag. Let's see who shall go first here. Okay, so Noah says, hey guys, I've been listening to the podcast for a couple of years now. The work that you and World Soccer Talk produce as a whole is uniquely helpful to the soccer community, so thank you for that. I've been meaning to ask this question for a long time on the basics of your work. How are TV viewership numbers collected? If I am watching the MLS tournament final on ESPN via the ESPN app on my PlayStation by logging into a TV provider, is that counted? So lots of good questions there too. So the TV viewership numbers are collected by Nielsen. So Nielsen is a measurement ratings company that takes a sample of an audience and then goes ahead and monitors them to see who's watching what at different times. And in the past, that used to be kind of a pen and paper. There used to be a notebook that somebody would have to fill out. These days, it's handled electronically. So if you're watching, like, say you're watching ESPN, that's a good example that you mentioned, Noah, you're watching the MLS's back on ESPN via, say, Fubo TV. On Fubo TV, if you look at the settings, it actually has a setting in there that talks about, I don't want to be measured in Nielsen ratings. And that is actually switched on. Actually, so I guess switched off automatically. You have to go in there and actually change it if you don't want to be measured. So Nielsen is looking at data from around the country, from the TV stations and from the networks and the streaming services, to see who's watching what, and then produces those numbers there. All right, next up is RJ Hawkins. And RJ says, gentlemen, great show. Thanks for keeping me updated on my streaming and league coverage options. If you were to give CBS any points of advice as to how to successfully cover the Champions League and Europa League in the next 4 years beyond what they're doing now, what would that be? Kartik, any thoughts on how CBS can improve?
they pretty much nailed it. I mean, I'm sure there are little things that we can pick on. I mean, even we didn't get to this in the discussion, but even the way that they've worked pre-match interviews with coaches and post-match interviews with coaches and players, and the Guillaume Balague, you mentioned that, and Rafa Honigstein getting to go to Bayern, or getting to go to Munich for the Bayern match. Those sorts of things are things that I don't think if I had put a template together, I would have necessarily put on there. And incorporating Steve McManaman and now Peter Schmeichel at sites. I suppose there's always room for improvement. I can't think of anything offhand that they haven't done so far. They're little things, but yeah, go ahead.
I've got two small things. The first thing is that I would speak to Clive Tilsley and Peter Drury and say to them, hey guys, don't try too hard. Just do your thing. Focus on your commentary of games. Do what you're fantastic at. And don't try to placate the American audience. Don't try to go down a hole talking about John Harkes and Greenville and all these things that have absolutely zero to do with the game that's happening. And like Clive Tilsley, don't you don't have to focus on talking about America or trying to talk to them during a broadcast. Just do what you do, which is covering the games, and then, I mean, everyone really, really appreciates that. Sure, if there's a valid discussion point that pertains to the United States, mention that, but don't try too hard. And I think that's one thing we've seen. The second thing, and to me this is a bigger thing, is that when the team sheets are announced, and it's, I mean, usually, you know, right an hour before kickoff, by the time they get to it, it's been getting better, but by the time they get to it, it's about 10 or 15 minutes after we all know who's starting. I would like to see that. I'd love to see that as kind of breaking news, kind of a ticker across the bottom, like Fox did. Fox used to do that. and having and actually have the graphics of the actual layout on the screen as far as who's in which position, spend a little bit more time on that. And again, they've gotten better as time has gone on. But to me, that's breaking news. That's something to lead off the broadcast with. Oh my gosh, I can't believe that Eden Hazard is starting. And here's what that means, and who's not playing as a result of that. Those types of things, and I think that's one thing that they can improve on is that breaking news. JP says another great podcast. Can't believe it's been 2 years. I've been listening religiously. The mailbag comment about World Cup '98 with Thierry Henry piquing his interest and then progressing to Barca and becoming hooked as a soccer fan. Speaks to why MLS still struggles for ratings. It may seem like there's a giant pool of soccer fans if you combine all of the European leagues, Liga MX, World Cup tournaments, and so on. While some of these groups overlap, it's mostly fragmented. Various reasons why someone will watch one of these matches, but not necessarily MLS. Liga MX viewership, I suspect, is made up of recent immigrants from Mexico who have emotional ties to the league. These fans are not going to jump to MLS. Maybe it's a generation or two. It will translate to more fans. But also possible in a generation or two, these potential fans will be watching more traditional American sports instead. European league viewership is driven by the mentality that those leagues are the best the world has to offer. Fans may disagree about the Premier League or La Liga and which is better, but regardless, the fans watching their league is the best, has the best talent. These fans won't necessarily watch MLS because they think MLS is second tier. MLS will need to attract the world's best talent, and that means before they reach their retirement age, to have these viewers watch it in large numbers. World Cup, Euros, Copa America, the summer tournaments bring in viewers from both diehard soccer fans and the casual sports viewer. The casual sports viewer, for the most part, isn't going to flock to MLS once the tournament ends. It's similar to the Olympics. Every 4 years, we get captivated with figure skating, swimming, curling, and other various events. Once the Olympics are over, these sports are forgotten about until the next cycle begins. It's watched because it's an event and some national pride. Same goes for a lot of people in the World Cup. So what is my point? MLS won't increase TV viewership by a large amount until it's viewed as comparable to the European leagues in talent. US men's national team winning a World Cup won't do it, in my opinion. Same reason the US women's national team winning doesn't translate to huge increases in viewership for NWSL. These are seen as one-off events and not linked to the casual fans' mind to domestic or foreign clubs. Kartik, do you agree with that? Any disagreements with what JP has said?
No, I think that's pretty accurate from my viewpoint. I mean, there might be little things I would nitpick on. I do not think MLS can be comparable in talent to European leagues. That's the problem. So it's all good to dream, and I support ProRel and opening, shifting the calendar and opening the system up. But it's very naive in this era, post Bosman era, to think any league outside Europe can rival leagues within Europe. So I'm concerned that if that's the standard, MLS will just never get there, because it's not going to happen. And when people cite the old NASL, to me, I always have to point out to them that was before cross-border movement, the free movement of labor, that those sorts of concepts were fully established in Europe, and before the European Union was anything more than just a trading bloc, right? So that's it was the European Economic Community in those days. I think you're talking about apples to oranges. So if the standard for MLS to get this sort of mass audience is being comparable to the top European leagues, it is not going to happen. It just isn't. Yeah. Unless there's some major shakeup in European politics and European football, which is unrelated to what we do here.
Yeah, one thing that could have happened that may have changed things, and it didn't happen, is that if there was a pandemic globally, and if Europe was completely infected by this, and the US taking the right protocols had been clear, and the US was the place to go to where it'd be safer and healthier and a better place to actually play and live, that could change things where you start to have a flood of transfers.
I think you know what you're actually seeing is that the reputation of the United States from a geopolitical standpoint is not as good as it was 10 years ago. The reputation of the United States, and certainly not as good as it was 20 years ago, the reputation of the United States in terms of handling this pandemic has been really poor. I do not think it is a coincidence Ibra and Rooney both left MLS and continued their careers in Europe. Resumed their careers in Europe, I should say. So the thought that MLS at one time was a safe retirement home is no longer the case for a lot of these players, because I think it's just now not as attractive to live in the United States unless there's tax implications or that sort of thing. I think that there's a lot of drawbacks to coming here. And I give Inter Miami credit. They've signed Blaise Matuidi, who I think is just a phenomenal player, one of my favorite players of the last decade in world football. But I think that's a one-off. I don't think you're going to get players of that level to come to the United States for a while, based on everything that's been going on.
Next up is Soccer Thoughts, and Soccer Thoughts says, finish the last podcast. I absolutely agree with your take that soccer is a niche sport in this country. It won't be dominant soon, but that doesn't mean we can't enjoy it. The sooner others come to terms with this, the happier they will be. Nick Siliberto says, before the MLS tournament began, I barely watched any MLS regular season and would catch some playoff matches. I wasn't anti-MLS in any way, but I generally got my soccer fix from European leagues in the mornings and afternoons and didn't have time to continue watching at night when MLS was usually on. I was initially skeptical about the tournament because I thought it was reckless, but I gave it a chance since there was very little meaningful soccer going on anywhere else at the time. I've really enjoyed the knockout stages, and the tournament has convinced me to try and make more time to watch MLS moving forward. That being said, if MLS goes forward with its plan to resume the regular season, I'm done with MLS. After seeing how badly Major League Baseball has done, and they don't even allow fans, there is no way to spin this move as anything other than reckless. They are basically announcing that they are okay with risking the health and safety of players and fans for cash. I don't want to invest any time or money in a league that acts this way. It will be easy enough to stick to European leagues and pretend that MLS doesn't exist. On a separate and unrelated note, I have a feeling you will discuss the Atalanta-PSG match, and I just want to say that I haven't been this disappointed and upset at a result of any sporting event in a very long time. And I'm not even a Atalanta fan. So, Nick, I think I wasn't upset. I was disappointed, but I could almost see it coming. You mean watching that game and seeing how PSG was kind of pushing forward, and Atalanta, like you said, Kartik and Roberto Martinez talked about, to kind of change the way that they played in the second half. They were getting tired. I could see it coming. It was it seemed to be happening, even though the PSG has failed so many times at that hurdle. But it was a really entertaining match, even if the result didn't go everyone's way that they wanted it to. But with Nick's comments talk about kind of what we've been talking about in the Lister mailbag, which is that the feeling in terms of the level of quality between, say, the European leagues or even South American leagues and MLS, and the differences between those. But in Nick's case, he gave MLS a chance. He was not hooked, but definitely interested in the tournament and was thinking about watching more MLS. But now with the plan that's going in place, that has taken place with Dallas playing Nashville this week, is he's probably not going to watch MLS anymore.
Yeah, and for me, it's difficult. So I had taken that stand with USL and with the other leagues, NISA, UPSL. I decided I would start watching the Dallas Nashville match on Wednesday night, and I was so angry after about 20 minutes, I shut it off and tweeted I wasn't going to watch MLS again, and have kind of recanted this morning, saying I'll give it another shot, which is the next match between Nashville and Dallas. But if it's equally bad with crowd, rowdy crowd, and people throwing things, and no social distancing, and I hope Nashville has a different standard than Dallas. Certainly, I think in terms of MLS, we would consider Nashville a higher level organization, right, than FC Dallas, which is the butt of many jokes around the league and around soccer, then maybe I'll stick. But I'm right on the edge. I mean, I actually had said the same thing last night. We're recording this on Thursday. I said that Wednesday night, I'm done with MLS. I can't believe that they're having fans in the stands, no social distancing, rowdiness, all of this stuff at a match in the middle of COVID. I will give it one more shot, which is the next match.
Yeah, for me, I think I tweeted something after MLS announced that they were coming back for the regular season, in that with MLS's back, I thought really that they had made two giant giant steps forward in a positive way with that tournament, and showing how they could basically run a really effective tournament and bring viewers in to watch. And then the level was decent to watch this competition. And the tweet was kind of like they've gone two steps forward, but now with the decision to go back into the different cities and have fans in the stadiums, now they've gone 10 steps back. I'm not as excited as watching MLS games now. I will probably tune in for some of them, but I just think that they should have waited a little while longer.
Yeah. I can't believe we had a match the very next night after that final. The schedule has come out until a certain point. It looks like, Chris, maybe some of this was to make up for Fox not having as many matches during the MLS's tournament.
That's the thing, though, because I went ahead and put the schedule together. I didn't create it, but I went ahead and on the worldsoccertalk.com website, went ahead and posted the MLS schedule. Almost all the games are on ESPN Plus, so it seems to be more of a makeup for ESPN. I don't know if this is part of the deal that they had with MLS and said, okay, we'll go ahead and have these games at ESPN Wide World of Sports, and we'll go ahead and produce everything and for the world feed for Fox and everything. But we want to have more games on ESPN Plus. And that's the vast majority of the games are on ESPN Plus. Now, I mean, there's some on Fox. I think there's one on Big Fox and a few small handful on FS1.
Yeah, it's the El Tráfico match. I think that's on
Big Fox. Univision didn't get hardly any, too. So to me, this makes me think that this was part of the deal that ESPN said, okay, we'll do this. We'll produce this. MLS is back. But once this tournament starts, once the season starts back up again, we want more games on ESPN Plus. So, which I guess in a way too is that if it is a bad look for MLS and whether things are happening at the stadium as far as people protesting or throwing things or just kind of rowdy fans, whatever it may be, if it is on ESPN Plus, it's not as many people, not as many eyeballs watching these games. You know, I mean, it's not on Big Fox, it's not on primetime ESPN. But it seems to be more that's what I've seen so far. But it is interesting. All right, Kartik, listeners, if you do have any thoughts, ideas, feedback, questions about streaming, questions about watching your favorite league or teams from around the world or wherever they may be, we want you to have your say. You can always reach us via email through web@worldsoccertalk.com, as well as facebook.com/worldsoccertalk, and on Twitter @worldsoccertalk. Plus, of course, you can always post your comments on worldsoccertalk.com. We love to get your feedback. Almost every post or every tweet or every comment we do get, we try to read out as many of those as possible. And we really appreciate you listening and really appreciate your input and analysis. It really kind of helps this show keep on driving. Kartik, before we head into another weekend, anything going on in your life or anything you're looking forward to in the next few days? Of course, we've got the Champions League, right?
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to Sevilla, Man United. I mean, I think that's an even matchup. And then when you look at Inter, Shakhtar, this is, I guess, we've had final fours of the semifinal level of the Europa League that have been good at times, but I don't remember one that may be this interesting. And then I think Bayer Leverkusen was right there in the conversation with all four of those clubs in terms of how good they were, but we call them Leverkusen for a reason, right? They really took it to Inter, but couldn't get over the hump, right?
Oh, man. Yeah, so I've never heard that one before. That's pretty rough.
That's a German thing. They call them Leverkusen because I mean we you and I visited the club and we talked about the season that they lost in three finals. Right, they lost in the Champions League final, German Cup final, and fell on the final day to not win the Bundesliga. That's the kind of club it is. But I'm excited about Europa League, and I'm people are going to be shocked I'm saying that because I've dissed the tournament. You've been a big advocate of it, and yeah. I have to give you credit for that, Chris. But I'm actually almost more excited about it than I am Champions League now with Atalanta out. Obviously, I have a rooting interest in Man City, but Atalanta was keeping me really focused on Champions League and then the dream of maybe them winning it.
It's amazing how far the Europa League has come as far as coverage goes. So you look back to last season on Turner Sports, none of the games were televised. It was all on streaming, right? It was all on BR Live. And yes, for the Europa League now, we get all those games on streaming except for the final. But you didn't get this type of level of pre-game and post-match analysis. We didn't mention Jules Breach, who's the host and presenter of the Europa League coverage. Kate Abdo doing the Champions League, and Jules Breach, who's really, really good. Another breath of fresh air in doing the Europa League. And then you look back a few years to what Fox was doing with Europa League, and they really used it as a... as an experiment. They were kind of betting a lot of their commentators and analysts and using them and putting them on the Europa League to have some practice, some match practice to commentate those games before World Cup tournaments. So it was really kind of an experiment, and a lot of those games, I mean, it was rough watching. It would be on FS2 on a Thursday and maybe get like 50,000 viewers. Last but not least, Kartik, I do want to mention one thing. We forgot to mention it in the TV ratings section, is how many people watch the games on CBS? Well, the answer is we don't know, and we'll probably never know, because CBS Sports Network, that has televised a couple of the games thus far, the Barcelona-Napoli game, of course, the big one. We know that the 967,000 people was on Univision and TUDN combined. CBS Sports Network is not nationally rated by Nielsen. So those numbers are not available. Now, if CBS wanted to go ahead and say, hey, Nielsen, can you do a custom report? We want to find out how many people are actually watching the Champions League on CBS Sports Network. CBS could pay for that and get that report to them. Whether they share that with the press or the public, they may not want to. But at the end of the day, CBS's push, really, it's 100% for CBS All Access. And then having some of the games on CBS Sports Network, and then maybe in a couple of years or maybe a year from now, we'll have some of the games on big over-the-air CBS Network. But the main push is CBS All Access. And I think from this podcast, Kartik, and previous ones too, that's really where you get the high-level analysis, which has been out of this world.
Yeah, and just a reminder, and I know we're signing off here, but just a quick reminder to listeners. If you have CBS Sports Network, look on your programming guide. I have recorded everything or set it to record permanently, but they are repeating all of these studio shows and matches that are on All Access in the overnight hours. So even the Europa League matches have all been repeated. So if you're not able to watch them live and you're not you don't have the streaming service, you can still see these matches. You can still see the quality presentation. And that's another thing I really appreciate. It is a byproduct of CBS Sports Network not having very much programming, right? They don't have the library of rights that NBC, ESPN, or Fox has. But they are showing all the broadcasts, again, on linear television.
Yeah, and to add one more thing to that, too, is that if you do miss any of the post-match coverage for the Europa League or the Champions League, is that CBS All Access has that available on demand, too. So you can go back in and watch and see Roberto Martinez and Jamie Carragher, who's been wonderful, as well as Peter Schmeichel, Rafa Honigstein. We can go on and on. These are some of the best commentators and some of the best analysts and some of the best talent from around the world. And we're seeing some rising stars included in that, too. And of course, too, CBS All Access has all the games on demand too. If you miss those, also for $6 a month and $60 a year, having access to every single Champions League game and Europa League game. I signed up for the annual plan. I was like, man, I'm hooked. Based on the analysis alone, it's worth the money.
Yeah, and I did the commercial-free one, so that's $10 a month.
So how does that work? Not to drag this on any longer, but how does that work, Kartik? So what commercials don't you see? You saw the Ted Lasso ones,
yeah,
right?
I saw all the Ted Lasso ads and all of the they have cut out. It looks like they've cut out the UEFA ads, the Heineken.
Okay.
The, Yeah.
The Pepsi.
Because the ads I've seen on television during the broadcast, because there are some matches where I've watched it on All Access first, and then, as I said, they tape in the overnight hours. It appears it's those ads. So I think for dramas and if you're watching shows and movies, which they have a great library of stuff that I'll dig into once Champions League is over on that,
right.
I think you get no commercials at all for that. So that's the advantage. But there's fewer commercials even for Champions League and for Europa League, which is also good.
Let me say one more thing, Kartik, and for those listeners who are still with us, it pays to go ahead and listen to the whole podcast. The one thing I forgot to mention is that with the CBS All Access and the coverage that they've had, is I have the I paid the $60 a year, so basically the $6 a month for the commercials. But there's a lot more analysis. You get a lot more content pre-game and post-match with TNT. It seemed like every 5 minutes it was going to a commercial. You come right back. Kate Abdo would say, okay, all right, coming back after the break, we'll talk about X, Y, and Z, whatever it may be. It was very commercial heavy, as was Fox Sports. With CBS All Access, they have a lot more time to analyze, and they're not rushing to a commercial break. You mean it's more of kind of a letting Roberto talk for a minute or two extra in order to get his thoughts in before they go to a break and do go to the Pepsi ads.
Yeah, and that's the same thing with NBC Premier League. Another complaint I have is that their pregame shows are just loaded with commercials. I mean, it's almost a commercial fest, right? There's nothing more. And I get that because in defense of NBC, ESPN, and Fox, soccer is a sport that's tough on television because you can't build ads into the broadcast itself, except at halftime. So that is why they do it. But yes, appreciate that with CBS. Also, that is one of the advantages of a pay service having the rights. There are other ways they can offset the cost. So for everybody complaining that things are leaving linear television and going to streaming, I feel you. I agree. I would rather watch all of these things on linear television, but there is a cost to it, and this is the upside where they can run with less ads, or in some cases, as I said, with the $10 plan, with virtually no ads.
All right, Kartik, so heading into another weekend of soccer from around the world with UEFA Champions League, UEFA Europa League, you've got the Brazilian League, you've got the Mexican League, you got MLS, you got a ton of different things happening. What should they do?
Enjoy your football.